So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable, Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher here with you at Wrestling Weekly. What a couple weeks it's been for Wrestling Weekly, Les. And you weren't here last week.
No, I'm very good, Doc. You were here, obviously.
You missed the entire debacle.
The power outage?
The horrible power outage that happened.
And was this just in your house or just...
It was my entire neighborhood.
All right.
It was pretty bad.
Probably some rival show sabotage.
Only in Indiana can you get, like, a severe thunderstorm in the middle of February. Really?
Well, you're out there in the plains, man.
Yes. And so we had Eric Young on the line, and we were just getting ready to come back from commercial, and then,
right,
boom, everything went out. So, you know, us being us, we had to have Eric Young back on the show.
Right.
So Eric Young's going to be here tonight.
Right.
Also, we've got the amazing, the legendary, the man I mark out for, Bill Watts, going to be on the program.
Yeah, I was just trying, and I might have to ask you, I don't know if it was 62 or 63 when I first met him. It was at the Louisville Fairgrounds Coliseum in Louisville. He was in to work for the Indianapolis office, which was I was working for at the time, which was Jim Barnett, was the promoter. So, yeah, I've known Bill a long time, and then we worked in Atlanta together when he was one of the bookers and one of the owners of that during the war of 73-74.
Ah.
Ah.
Yes.
So, and he's got a book out. And I saw Bill back in October.
Where'd you see him at?
In Tulsa.
Uh-huh.
He came and visited with Cornette and Terry Taylor and Dr. Tom and myself.
Great.
Yeah. The guy was brilliant in this business, manipulating, you know, a good storyteller, and obviously successful. So it'll be interesting to listen to Bill. And I say his book, I think, has already hit the market just the last few days, or will be in the next few, so we'll find out. And
has he mellowed in his old age?
Has he mellowed? Oh, yeah, I think so. I think we all have, yeah.
Except Ole Anderson.
Yeah, you know, well, bless his heart. I'll see Ole coming up, too, the Mobile reunion.
Yeah, we got to not have him on the show. That'd be awesome.
Just very loose, and you and I could just hang up, right? Let him run. He's always on. What can I tell you? He is so glib, and his wit is so dry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like Cornette. If you read in the Observer about the book, Cornette said, "Ole, you're an obnoxious blah 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 blah," or you know, for some reason I love you anyway.
Yeah.
But that's the reason I love you, or something like that. We both. But yeah. Ole's, you know, he's funny. He's a trip.
He would come on here and like tear me apart. He would like.
Oh, well, if you push the right buttons, my friend, he'll shoot down.
He would ruin my ego so bad I'd never be able to be on the air anywhere.
But that's just the way he is. He picks on everybody.
You'd find me doing AM country somewhere in a couple of years.
We were down there a couple of years ago. We were all standing out in the motel parking lot, and we're all a bunch of guys, and I don't know what it was about, but he apologized to Bobby Simmons, and I said, "Will somebody get that on tape?" Ole Anderson just apologized.
Exactly.
Please write the time down, the day, and have it documented. But, yeah, but you know, Oh, Bill was very creative, and I think it'd be very interesting for all the fans. Very much so.
Good, good, good.
I got some
news this week.
Well, you know what? The topic for me, man, and I watched it over back several times, was actually breaking her leg.
Yes.
Appeared, and again, I don't know, because they pull the camera off of it once you see her go down to grab it, and then there's no more shot, or at least not, you know, on the screen.
So, right.
But it appeared that she came down with her leg under it at a bad angle, and her weight just came down on it, you know. But see, that particular thing, they had her stand on her head, right?
Yeah.
And that's a tough bump for an experienced person. And a very athletic one, you know.
Exactly. I was going to ask you what you chalked that up to, just an accident or not being trained?
You know, I chalk it up to an accident, absolutely. I mean, I don't think the girls intentionally hurt her, no. But I just think, you know, after I watched it back a few times, I thought to myself, that's a bad bump for anybody to take. You know, because it's basically like stand on your head on that top row, you know, the top rope, and then boom, you're just being dropped.
Right, and she's not much of a wrestler.
No.
So.
No, she's not. I mean, you know, she's been at it, what, for over a cup of coffee, for God's sakes, what, a few months?
Yeah.
And when we say a few months, to the best of my knowledge, only if she's in the ring on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah,
you know,
basically.
I mean, I don't know. She might be where, I don't think she's working out down at OEW or in Deep South, but anyway, yeah, it's a shame that it had to happen. But I thought that, you know, it's a dangerous pursuit for experienced people. So it's just, you know, when you put them out there too quick, you know, it's more apt to happen. Don't get me wrong; it could have happened to a 15-year veteran. But the point is, it's more apt to happen to someone that doesn't have the experience.
Right.
Yeah.
JBL also undergoing surgery.
Yeah, I heard that.
He's got a broken hand, dislocated bone.
All right. No,
yeah.
Well, not all right. I said that wrong, didn't I? No, absolutely not. Yeah.
We're going to have to use that in a commercial somewhere. Well, all right.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's good that he can undergo surgery and fix it. Here's the other thing, too. They condemn, or they, I don't know who they are. People, you know, a percentage of the fans or the writers condemn WWE for cutting back on the big bumps, you know, and keeping some of the dangerous spots out. And but you see, here's the deal: guys get hurt anyway, right? But for less periods of time, and it's going to happen. You know, I mean, it's protecting your investment.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is, you know. I mean, sure, the high fly is great and all the, you know, all the big crazy bumps, but at some point it's going to take its toll. You know, humans make mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I hate to say this, but they let the dicks go.
Yeah.
I don't even like the way that's...
Vince released the dicks.
Yes, I mean, you can't say it without having it.
I guess that's the whole point, isn't it?
I guess. And you know what? But there, here we go back again. But what is the point?
Yeah.
It's of no value, was it? And here's a couple guys that they certainly weren't ready mechanically for the big show. You know, the gimmick, I guess, got... And I didn't see it in OVW from what I'm told. It was a little more elaborate down there, and it got over, you know. But again, they're not ready to wrestle at that level, you know. So I feel... I don't even know the guys, but I feel... excuse me, I have met them, but I don't really know them. But, you know, it's a screwy thing because they're busting their butt, you know. And from what I hear, again, is that they were about mechanically where they would be, you know. They still had a lot to learn, and they weren't given the opportunity. So, I don't, you know, it's a shame that shove them out there. You know, it's kind of like your dad throwing you in the river, sink or swim.
Yeah.
You have a choice. But but that's the nature right now, and it's we talked about this a few weeks ago. There's more young, inexperienced guys put in key situations. Mm-hmm. And you don't know if they can deliver until they deliver, you know? There's no farm to try it out on anymore. There's small territory.
Yeah, back in the 60s, you'd never see anything like that.
No. Well, I mean, it was just like remember when Dory, we were talking, you know, if they had, well, if they had a guy in there that needed some seasoning, then they'd call Eddie Graham and say, you know, as a, for instance, and say, hey, we got a preliminary guy. Can he come in? So he's going to do jobs. He's going to work with some good people. But he's going to learn.
Yeah.
You know, because he's going to work with veterans. So that's the deal. It's and that's not available to him anymore, sadly enough. So, you know, and Doc, I'm going to say this now, you know. Now I'll get off my soapbox.
Okay.
After watching Monday night, and not mean, you know, trying not to demean anyone in particular, but I thought the only match that was decent on that show was the three-way, which I thought was going to be a real cluster because of the conflict in styles, you know, Van Damme and Big Show and Helmsley.
Yeah.
But they put it together pretty damn good. But the rest of the show was just, I mean, as far as the in-ring product was just there, you know. And I read a few reviews at different places, and it seemed like some of the reviewers, they were cool with that. Right, well, they progressed the storyline, and okay, but or are they just reviewing it as such now? Is that the language they're using because they're assuming it's more of a soap opera? I don't know, you know, but but the point was they weren't, didn't say, you know, they didn't seem to, the fact that the matches weren't, you know, very good didn't seem to matter to them. And it's just that the bar has been lowered.
Yeah.
And you find your own level, right? I mean, you flatline at some point. You stabilize. If you don't get more, I guess you don't expect more. I don't know. You know, it's amazing to me.
I think you said it well when you said that the bar has been lowered, especially with WWE. I don't expect much out of them as far as in-ring product. If I want to see some wrestling, real wrestling in ring, I'll go watch TNA. For WWE, it just seems like it's this type of variety show that happens to have some wrestling on it. You know, that's one of the
And the sad thing, but they have the good performers and some of the storylines are really more than bearable simply because of the good performers too. I was talking to some people over the weekend. We were saying, you know, Melina and Charmel came up in the conversation that they worked the corner as good as any woman has in recent times,
mm-hmm.
you know, or better.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, which is, you know, which is good. They've got, you know, they've got some good talent, but they've got to season it. And I don't know. I just... But those are the good storylines, coupled with some good in-ring production, you know. Mm-hmm. But I the whole parade of the thing, like Carlito coming out with a mic, and believe me, I've seen this done before, years ago, the microphone while he beats the guy up, right?
Yeah.
Not often. But, I mean, but then again, it was done on a card that probably was, the rest of the card was not, I won't say pure wrestling, there was showmanship, right, but nothing quite like that, right? So it was isolated and yet stood out because of its uniqueness.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now it's just no big thing.
I think it's been far between, you know, few and far between enough to make it special what happened.
Yeah. I just think, I mean, there's some good talent. It's just a matter of going back to where you educate the audience. I mean, you know, when there is a good match, when there's a Benoit angle or a Michaels, Helmsley or whatever, you know, the people let you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not that they aren't as receptive, but it's just here again, we come back to the two kids that just got released. You know, they're not mechanically ready, but, I mean, that's not the stamp of death. They just need more time.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, but now they're floating out there. I mean, they got a little FaceTime on TV, which... might get him a couple more bucks on the independents, but is still trying to hack out a living, which is tough.
Yeah.
You know, and the opera, I mean, that's not the, I'm not saying they were going to be big stars, but you don't know what their possibility is going to be because they weren't given a chance to come along and be nurtured and actually learn their craft.
Right. On the bright side, they won't have to be the dicks anymore.
Well, that's true, too. And that is, if there's a plus to this whole thing, that would be it.
Yeah.
I do believe. What do you think about Bret Hart going into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, hell froze over.
Well, I think it's right. And
sure.
I think for something like this, you set these other things. I mean, I realize that was one of the bigger other things that happened in the last 20 years. But, you know, you set some things aside, and it's given a little time to heal. Come get the award. He's earned it. He doesn't have to schmooze with anybody he doesn't want to schmooze with, right?
Right.
He can go on home, so.
He doesn't, he's not going to be on the show.
No.
He's not allowing WWE to pay for him to come out or to pay for his hotel. So he can still say that he's never worked for WWE.
Yes.
But I think that's a little juvenile, a little immature-ish, but I mean, you know, it's Bret's life.
You know, yeah, but, you know, in the business, it's kind of like the Dirty Laundry's being aired, you know, People Magazine or The Enquirer, whatever, it's the same thing. You know, it's the underside, it's the other side that you don't see when it's strictly just a celebrity thing,
mm-hmm.
you know. But everybody's human. And, of course, egos fuel this business.
Yeah.
You know, and the old saying, and I think everybody's done it, you start believing your own press clippings. I mean, that's part of it, too. One of the things we stressed in this camp over the weekend was think, shoot, but work, you know, that for the safety of both of you and for the fact that the reason we're working is because most shoots aren't pretty to begin with.
Right.
You know, and anyway, point being, there's a lot of good talent. It just isn't given a chance to, to grow, and that's a shame. And excuse me, I'm going hoarse here. Again, it goes back to the thing I've been saying. They need to set up another Three Deep South or someplace.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they need to. And I think I'm not a stockholder, so I mean, it's not for me one way or the other. But I think they can really afford it. Obviously, the foreign market now has really kicked in to save the day if you start seeing some of these numbers because you're like your pay-per-views are up. But part of that, they write in the foreign market, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
the thing is with WWE and OVW in Deep South, now they can hide a couple people down in Deep South, and nobody's going to notice them until they're ready. With OVW, they're so popular as it is just by being a developmental territory that if they opened up three more territories, wouldn't they be just as popular and hard to hide?
You got to give Deep South time, too. And then you see, part of that is to the determination of the promoter, right?
Mm-hmm.
We sold some tapes, before we had a contract. But once we had that kind of talent coming through our gym, and that kind of talent on our roster, you know, the request became more because we obviously were just a regional television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, that's part of the whole deal. But, of course, Deep South's just been there a short time. They're not on TV yet. And in a much more huge market, you know, Atlanta versus Louisville. So it's not that they're getting lost down there, but, you know, it's just going to take them time to get the thing over.
Yeah.
You know, that's the big thing. But, you know, it's goes back again. I keep chewing the same stuff over and over, but that's what it's about. It, you know, here's where your Charlie Haas and Jamie Nobles, instead of releasing them and hiring them back 4 or 5 months, is put them to these places,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're still getting paid, and they still are productive because they're in the gym doing in the training with these guys. They were able to communicate with them on their own level, and, you know, they've been to the dance. They can explain to the kids the politics, you know, the protocol, whatever. You know, plus, that gives the kids a chance to work with a higher level of talent on a more consistent basis. So I think that's, you know, you grow. I know at my place, it was a great growth spurt for the kids that were with me, you know, before and after,
mm-hmm.
because they had a chance to work with so many talented guys. You know, that's the problem with developing the indies now anyway, Doc, is because it's, you know, so for so much of it is the blind leading the blind. I don't mean that in an offensive way. I mean, it's not that nobody's trying to learn, but it goes back, you and I can't do brain surgery without reading a book.
Right.
You know, so it's just, you know, it's needed. You know, it'd be great if TNA were to get bigger, if they open a couple, you know. And then you've got your minor leagues. But, again, they feel their need, too.
But who wants to be the guy in the developmentals that everybody's learning from without going to the top yourself?
Well, did you ever hear of getting sent to the minors? But, see, in our business, here's the problem. You got to understand the business you're in,
mm-hmm.
right? Back when I was active between 1960 and 19, well, even past that, but during my time, 60 to 80, there were territories. I don't care who it was, the greatest worker in the world only had so much longevity in a particular area.
Right.
Right? The bigger the area, the less he was, you know, recycled in the same place, so he could stay longer. In the Carolinas, you could stay longer than you could in Georgia. But, you know, once you ran your string, as we used to say, you'd give the booker, and he'd say, well, you know, maybe you need to get out for a while. Do you want me to call someplace and help you shop around? You've got some in mind yourself, and then you set up a deal, and, you know, depending on how important you are, any place from 2 weeks to 6 weeks or more to work out your notices, you know, and they get a chance to, you know, pull you out of programs if you're in any, and so forth and so on, and you move on to another territory. You come back in 6 months, come back in a year, year and a half, whatever the number, you know, and you're refreshed, but yet you're still active.
Right.
Well, the business is not that way today, so it's, to me, I never, and you know, here's, I'll tell you, I won't mention names, but of the numerous members of the higher fraternity that came through my place during my time in the system, there's only one or two that were really prima donnas or that really, because, you know, it was untried. We didn't know either. But all these guys, they came in. They did the warm-up drills, the cardio drills.
Mm-hmm.
They worked out with the guys. They worked on the little shows in the gym in front of 125 people, you know, up to the bigger shows. But so, you know, it's just the way the business is. They can't be up there all the time either.
Right.
And some of, you know, and it's important, Doc, to have preliminary guys that are strong and understand their craft and can get the bigger guys to get over on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they have to be recycled, obviously, more often than the guys who are winning all the time.
Right.
See? So, but once you establish them, you can do that. And it's not like it's a big secret now because the fans know. Plus, those guys down here in the territories and developmental camps will help those promotions draw on a local level. I mean, you're not going to sell out by thousands, but you know, it'll have a couple hundred to a house for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a win-win all the way around, as I see it, because if you lay somebody out and they can't work any place, then you get stale. Your timing falls off, you know. So, I mean, again, I think it's a win-win situation.
It sounds like it. It makes a lot of sense when you say
Doc,
it that way.
Well, just front me a few mil, and we'll put it together.
We'll start Midwest Championship Wrestling.
Yes, there you go. We'll have the Doc Young Memorial Cup every year.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, I'd have to be dead.
I heard that.
Ricky Morton got released from jail last week.
Well, either that or his twin brother wrestled on the cards where I was at Friday and Saturday.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's out.
I missed him. I could have been in Evansville. He got out of jail Wednesday morning on February 15th, and he was in Evansville that night wrestling for CCW.
Yeah.
And I should have went. I didn't know he was going to be there.
Yeah, we and Robert wrestled Eaton and Condry Friday night, and that changed. I didn't go to the show Saturday night, but they were on the card Saturday night as well. We had all the Expresses, the Lightning Express, the Midnight Express, and the Rock and Roll Express. I told them, I said, now if we just had Federal Express.
This train tracks running everywhere.
Yeah, we have an Express tournament or something.
You could have.
Absolutely. You know who the Lightning Express is?
The Lightning Express.
I'm not going to whisper it to you, Doc. Tim Horner and Brad Armstrong.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, he's out.
Cool.
cool.
Is he,
sure,
is he showing
sure
any?
He's happy about it.
Is he showing any ring rust?
Well, you know, the timing's still there.
Yeah.
You know, he's. I mean, nobody's. You know what they were 20 years ago, for God's sakes, or 15 years ago, for that matter.
Right.
So, you know, but they. You know, I'll tell you the amazing thing. We had guys in for the camp from all over the country. You know. And they were so amazed at how easy it is to work the crowds in these small towns in the southeast.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. I mean, there's still a lot of them still want to see, you know, the older stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, and plus with, I guess, their childhood idols, gives them a bit of nostalgia and reliving their youth, you know, which is cool. It's pretty cool.
If you're a new listener, guys, we're talking about Les Thatcher's training camps. He works with EPWT, Elite Pro Wrestling Training. You can check that stuff out at EPWT.com.
I'll tell you what, let me throw out some props here. Some
sure.
We had a great time. We had a nice turnout. I got a chance to work with some names I'd never heard of. Crystal Carmichael from Chicago was there. Chase Stevens worked on the shows from TNA. And Chase came in and laced him up and trained with us, too.
Excellent.
Yeah, cool. And from the OVW school, not the contract people, but Serena and Venus, and Russell Simpson, who is the beginner's trainer at OVW, came out and worked out with us. Johnny Rumble, a promoter from New England. A couple good boys from up there, by the way. Thomas Penmanship. And Handsome Johnny and John Thornhill from Chaotic, and John trains out in Slam with Bob Evans. But anyway, and then from Altitude Pro Wrestling in Denver, there was a group came in. One of my trainees, Sarge, runs the school. And anyway, the little girl, 18 years old, Doc, has been in the business less than a year, shooting steamboat-style arm drags for Ricky. I'd seen her do it on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
And so before he's only with us the one day. So I said, Rick, come here, I want you to see something. I said, her name's Courtney. She let me arm drag. And she, you know, he said, yeah, nice. And he said, can you do two in a row with, you know, swing right back up? Yeah, boom, boom. Really nice. Everybody's impressed with her. She's got a future. She's about 5'6", 130 pounds, 18 years old, and less than a year in the business.
And what's her name?
Courtney. If she wrestles under Dixie, I'm pulling a blank here.
Dixie.
Yeah, but she's with Altitude Pro Wrestling in Denver.
Cool.
And they're good. They're a good crew. But there were some good people, like I say, from all over.
Did Chrissy Vane show up?
Huh?
Chrissy Vane show up?
Yeah, they were at the show, yes, and she's excited, of course, about reporting to Deep South.
Yeah.
And, the first time I had a chance to see the bondage, human bondage.
Mm-hmm. Team bondage.
Huh?
Team bondage.
Team bondage, right, human bondage, you know, straight up. Yes, exactly. They had a lot of energy. They had a lot of energy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were good, and... Bordell Walker was, his knee was getting some problems, but he was with us for a day. And we had a real good time. And some good kids. Some very good kids.
Sounds good. We've got a great show for you coming up tonight. Bill Watts is going to be on the program. We've also got, coming up next, Showtime, Eric Young from TNA. He thinks Sting's coming back. We're going to find out about all that stuff and Eric Young's career.
Cool.
And take some questions from the chat room. So stick around, guys. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher here on Wrestling Weekly. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with TNA's and Team Canada's Eric Young here on Wrestling Weekly. Stick around.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
Brothers and sisters, we're here for one reason and one reason alone.
What's up, gang? The Trey Dog here with my tag team partner,
JFK.
Are you looking for the latest and greatest in wrestling media?
Check out a brand new site, www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com.
The new home of some of your favorite wrestling radio shows, such as
Wrestling News Live,
WTR Sunday Nights,
Monday Night Mayhem,
Wrestling Weekly,
and Trash Talking Radio.
Also, a brand new show that will cover the latest from the world of PS2, PS3, Xbox, and Xbox 360 video games. Not to mention video interviews and other special wrestling video features. For your one-stop shop in the world of wrestling and video game media,
visit our new home at www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com.
Country boys don't rock and roll. Yeah, the record man's home, so you'll never get it on the radio. Well, I'm a crazy son of a
bad word,
but I know I'm gonna make it big and rich. Yeah, I'm gonna let it.
www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com.
Here's the latest news and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip. It's just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
And now it's time for the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Hello, this is Adam Martin from MuscleView.com with some breaking news. For all the latest and greatest in wrestling media, check out a brand new website at www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com, the new home of some of your favorite wrestling radio shows such as WTR Sunday Nights, Wrestling News Live, Monday Night Mayhem, Wrestling Weekly, and Trash Talking Radio. Also, a brand new show that will cover all the latest from the world of PS2, PS3, Xbox, and Xbox 360 video games, not to mention video interviews and other special wrestling video features. For your one-stop shop in the world of wrestling and video game media, visit our new home at www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com. This has been a breaking news update from WrestleView.com. I'm Adam Martin.
Back to you!
Hi there, folks. This is Joseph White here, and I'm here to tell you about a brand new show on www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com. The show is called From Pillar to Post Live, and it is taking Wednesday nights by storm, with such guests as AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Don West, indie star Human Tornado, and many, many others. This show is something you do not want to miss out on. That's P2P Live every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right after In Your Head. For more information, such as how to contact the hosts, upcoming guests, and to chat with other P2P fans in our forums, log on to www.p2plive.net. That's www.p2plive.net. We'll see you Wednesday night, folks.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Like I said, we got Bill Watts coming up in the show in a little bit. Right now on the line, Eric Young, from TNA. I almost called him Eric Watts. Eric Young from TNA Team Canada is on the program. Eric, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you. Eric, we talked a little bit before you came on the air. You've been at this 8 years, and of course a lot of the fans here aren't aware of your background at all. So let's start with, we have one thing in common. You were trained by Waller Von Erich. I wrestled him back in the early 60s. Tell us, how did you actually come, did you live in the, where, around where Walter was, or did you just find out that he had a gym, and that's where you transferred to.
I knew that he was kind of like co-partners in a gym that was about 2 hours from where I grew up, and I got a hold of them, and I went up there for an interview, and it seemed like a real good deal. They had Waller would always be in the gym, but the guy doing most of the physical training part of it was Carl LeDuc, which is Joe LeDuc, the Canadian lumberjack from way back in the day, and his dad was Paul LeDuc, so he was there. He lived at the Hart House for like 4 years, and he was trained by them, so I was trained by him and Waller.
And then how did you get hooked up with TNA?
I started doing the independents wherever I could. I've been all over North America. Like, I wrestled in every province in Canada. And then, through Scott D'Amore, mostly. I had done a couple of the pay-per-views that they did out of Nashville and a couple of darks before I started with the Team Canada thing.
How did you... Who came up with your character that you do now? And how would you describe that character?
I can't really put my finger on how it even started. It was just like they're talking about you know how they needed to develop personalities and have characters on the show, and they asked me if I would be interested in doing it. And I think it was like Dutch Mantel and Scott, and I think Terry Taylor had something to do with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they just said you know we're just trying to give each guy in Team Canada like a personality, and they just gave me the like a nervous, paranoid, you know, scared of everything kind of character, and I just kind of ran with it.
Is that how they described it to you when they were suggesting it, or what did they describe the character as?
It was real vague. Like when I started, it was your guy. He's gonna have phobias of everything. He's gonna be hear voices, and he's gonna be scared, and he's gonna backpedal and run. And so I just went from there. The first time it really showed up, I think, on TV was when we did the funeral segment.
Mm-hmm.
That was I was telling Terry the weekend, I think, of all the TNAs I've seen, that particular segment just really jumps out at me. That was well done. It really was.
Yeah, it was really fun doing it, and I remember after, like, everyone commenting on it and stuff, and they're saying it was one of the best that the TNAs had, so I was glad to be a part of that.
Yeah, it was excellent. I want to take a question from the chat room. Professor VNS said, do you know you're going head-to-head with SmackDown in Canada right now, and there are more people listening to Wrestling Weekly than watching SmackDown in Canada?
That's good.
But did you know that that TNA is going head-to-head with SmackDown?
No. No, I had no idea.
When it comes on the air on prime time, it'll be going... head-to-head with SmackDown in some parts of Canada.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, because I guess it still does air. I'm actually in Canada right now. I'm in Niagara Falls, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was saying that it still airs on Thursdays here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's going to... We told Terry Taylor that a couple weeks ago, and he didn't know either.
Yeah.
So this Canadian guy, he knows it all.
Yeah, kind of exciting.
Raven wants to know if you enjoyed your short time in WWE.
I never worked there.
No.
Did a whole pile of dark matches and Velocity and Heat and stuff. And at one point, I did like 6 weeks in a row there. And there was guys working there that thought I was working there. But I was always treated fairly there. It was fun to be on the road with them and stuff. And I had fun doing it because it was a really exciting time in my life. That's for sure.
So you really didn't have a contract. You were just called up to be on.
Yep.
Wow. That's a lot of times in a row, though, for somebody who's not under contract.
Yeah, it was, I had no job, so I had nothing else to do, so.
Who did you get to wrestle?
I worked with Sean Morley, Val Venus, the FBI. I worked Spanky and Paul London, Tyson Tomko, Mordecai, a bunch of indie guys I did darks with, some of my friends, Tyson Dukes, and... Mark Bartolucci, El Tigre, a whole pile of guys.
Wow. So you had a lot of experience packed into a little short amount of time.
Yeah, sure did.
Excellent.
How old are you, Eric?
I'm 26, just turned 26 in December.
Hell, then you're just sitting ready to hit your prime. You got another 15 years, man.
Yeah.
At least.
Absolutely.
With some of my... my peers, maybe you got another 30 years. I don't know. I watch some of the guys that I broke in with still working. And I said, okay.
I'm really interested to see where this the whole thing about you and Sting is going to go. I don't want you to give anything away, of course, but this whole thing about how you know Sting's not gone. I thought that was interesting. And it was a little, it reminded me a little bit of the I See Dead People kid from the movie. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
the whole thing reminded me of that, because you just look at the camera and you're like, Sting's not gone.
Yeah.
Sting's coming back.
I'm not really sure where it's going either myself. I mean, they don't really tell me much because I got kind of a big mouth. But it's just exciting to be part of the one of the main storylines in the whole deal. So
mm-hmm. Excellent. Chico 22 wants to know: do you think you're being used properly?
Yeah, I'm having a great time. I think for me, one of my strongest points in my short career has been my ability to develop a character and get a character over and to connect with people through that way. I think for me, my wrestling is kind of secondary. I'm not trying to shortchange myself, but I think I did a lot of acting and community theater and stuff when I was younger, and I think that's one of my strong points. And I'm glad they're finally letting me do it rather than just my gimmick being you're from Canada. That's all I had really go on before. So
that's
really really fun.
And there was, how many others were just from Canada and Team Canada? And it did seem to me like they were kind of bland.
Exactly. Yeah.
But now you're the one that sticks out pretty much in Team Canada.
Yeah, I'm having a blast. I think they're just trying to have more characters. Because to me, I mean, if you have a character and a personality, people can become more attached to you. And with that, it can only lead to bigger and better things.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you known Bobby Roode? How long?
Yeah.
Let me think. It's got to be close to 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Then what was it? He spent a little time at my place. Every time he'd do something, he used to yell. What was it?
Sometimes when he would do the thing where he would cover somebody 1, 2, and then he would yell 3 after he would cover someone. I know he used to do that.
Yeah, there's something he did. I forget what it was now. But we were talking.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I know exactly. I can't remember what he would say, but I remember after he'd cover a guy, he would yell the same thing every time.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, there's a guy with a personality that really hasn't been allowed to come out either. I mean, one that I know of.
Yeah.
And there's the biggest thing I think we must talk about on the air, but I think it's pretty much across the board that they just need to develop more of your guys' personality. And I'm sure you must feel the same way, because it's obviously a lot easier to reach the people if they understand a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I know that's where they're heading, and they know that it's something that TNA is sort of lacking in. Is a lot of the guys are the same person.
Yeah.
A lot, they have different names and they wear different stuff, but other than that, there's not a lot that separates them. And I think that's something that they're really concentrating on now. And It's gonna get really exciting.
You guys are involved in something. I know when Tom Pritchard, this camp we did this past weekend was Steamboat was with us on Friday. It was Terry Taylor, Tom Pritchard, myself, and Tracy Smothers. But when you try to explain tag team psychology to people, they don't understand it because the art's almost dead. And that's the one thing I see with TNA that I hope they continue to push. Is like there is a tag team division, and put more emphasis on it.
Yeah, it's funny because before I got to TNA, I barely ever had tag matches. I might have had in 6 years maybe 20 tag matches ever.
Wow.
I was primarily singles, and I was always babyface. So it was like learning how to wrestle all over again when I first got there.
Yeah.
But which was exciting because it was all new to me. Not totally new, but it seemed new because I had been singles and babyface for so long.
Right.
So it was. I love tag wrestling, and I think it's something. TNA is concentrated on, and they could even concentrate more on it because they have a lot of good tag teams, a lot of strong tag teams.
Absolutely. Cody wants to know how long you see Team Canada being together, and do you see a singles push for yourself down the line?
I could see one developing, that's for sure. I'll be honest, I hope I'm together with Team Canada forever. But, you know, those are four of my best friends in the business. I've known a lot of them for years, you know. Like, I've known Bobby for 4 or 5 years. I've known Petey that long. I've known A1 almost that long. Former member Johnny Devine, he's one of my best friends. So no complaints out of me if they keep us together for a long time.
Yeah.
But I see it, you know, spreading off, and I know that there's been talks of a singles push for Petey and Bobby and myself, and you know, it could go either way.
Yeah, Scott D'Amore smacked you real hard last week.
Yeah, he certainly did.
He's a stiffy too.
Is he stiff on them slaps there, Eric?
Yeah, they don't leave a lot to the imagination, that's for sure.
I remember he came down and spent a week here in Cincy when D'Lo was with at my place, and he trained with us and stuff. And we got ready to leave, you know, he says, "I'm stealing some of your stuff," and I said, "Well, of course you are." Yeah, I said, "You're still wet behind me." But he's got his heart into it, that's for sure.
Yeah, he certainly does.
Yeah, Scotty's a character.
Jay Palermo wants to know, did you see the locker room, or did the locker room view the signing of Sting as a positive thing for the company?
I think it was a big deal for a lot of guys there to have such like a high level star to sign for his deal and stuff, bring him in. I think he hasn't looked that good in a long time. And it's exciting, you know, he's one of my favorites growing up, so just to be involved in the storyline and stuff, and I know a lot of the guys, you know, he was, you know, one of their favorites growing up and stuff, to have them there, he's a super guy, so it's really good for the company, I think.
You know what, Doc, that brings up something in my mind, listening to talk about that, mentioning that Sting was your childhood idol. The one thing, I worked in the ring for 20 years, and the one thing that I still regret is Buddy Rogers was my childhood idol, and I never got a chance to work with him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've done a lot of things, but that was the one thing. It just, you know, and I know how, you know, you and I can talk about it, but, I mean, it's something, if you don't know, to go in a dressing room with somebody that you bought tickets to see or pay-per-views or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different thing. It's a different feel.
Yeah.
It's kind of surreal at times.
Yeah.
M80 wants to know, are the internet rumors true about TNA wanting The Rock?
I don't know. I don't know about this, so
yeah.
I don't imagine they would be opposed to it.
I don't either.
Right. I think the real question is it true that they're talking about it?
I couldn't tell you honestly. I don't know. I don't really follow it all that well, so.
Any chance of bringing in Natty Neidhart as a female member for Team Canada? That comes from the chat room.
I'm sure it's a possibility. I met Natty. She's a sweet girl. I think she's a good worker, and I don't know if they're thinking about starting a women's division or what. But I mean, I would welcome the idea. That's for sure.
Raven wants to know: are you and Doc Young long lost second cousins? Are there any plans for a family reunion?
Sometime soon, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're gonna be meeting up in Ontario somewhere, and all the Youngs are gonna be there. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, big party.
Yeah, we're gonna have a volleyball tournament. How many teams will be participating in the World X Cup, and which countries?
I didn't even know there was going to be another World X Cup. I knew they were talking about it, mm-hmm. And it being a possibility. I think it would be a great idea. I think it gives TNA like a international feel, you know. Having Team Japan and Great Britain and stuff, and it was cool to be part of that.
You know, I think meaningful tournaments or things of that nature, going back all through the years, if they're done properly, people look forward to them.
Yeah,
they're as meaningful as you can make them, and I think that also will do. Well, it's just like, you know, whether Crockett was ahead or behind. In the Vince race, it was everyone remembers Starrcade,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I,
yep.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think he was just agreeing with you.
Yeah, I was just agreeing.
I'm not used to people agreeing with me, Eric. Stop.
He does the show with me, you know. Yoshi wants to know, where's Johnny Devine?
He's living in Winnipeg now. I talked to him a couple weeks ago. He's doing good. He's helping run a wrestling school up there and working and stuff. And I know there's talks about bringing him back. Again, I don't work in the office, so I don't know what their plans are, but I'd be glad to see him back. That's for sure. I miss him.
Yeah, that'd be great. What kind of role is Bob Ryder still playing in TNA, or is he in there at all?
He does a lot of the travel, booking the flight and stuff like that. But other than that, I don't know how deep he's involved still. I know he used to go to all the meetings and stuff, and he helped organize a promotion I worked for at Nashville sometimes, and I think he's got a good head on his shoulders for wrestling, like storylines and stuff like that. So
I haven't seen
really know.
I haven't seen you much. I'm trying to think of the word. I haven't seen you much advertised for like many independents. I mean, what kind of independents do you work for usually?
I mean, I'll work anywhere.
Right.
You know, but I don't do a whole lot. I live in Nashville. A lot of people. There's not a lot of good shows that go on there. I try to just involve myself with, you know, strong promotions and stuff like that. But I do them here now. I have a show Saturday actually for it's called BSE out of Toronto, and they have run pretty good shows there. So I got that one Saturday.
Okay. EL wants to know, who would you like to see in TNA?
Who would I like to see in TNA? Any of my friends from Ontario, that's for sure. There's a whole bunch of really skilled guys in Ontario, and unfortunately they don't ever get a good look because unfortunately they're in Canada,
right.
And it's hard to like, you know, stand out and get good publicity if you live here.
I'd say back in when I was working, they used to call Hamilton the factory.
Yeah,
because so many guys came out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably name, you know, 10 or 15 guys offhand that could be working either, you know, for WWE or for us.
Sure.
They're that good. There's a lot of talent here.
Talking about personalities, a name just crossed my mind, a guy I haven't seen in a while, but he's still around. You know Anthony Redgrazer?
No, I don't know if I know him or not.
Oh, damn, I can't think what name. He's wrestled under, so Kingdom James.
Kingdom James. That sounds familiar to me.
He's got a hell of a rap. I mean, he's not a great mechanic in the ring, but he's got a personality, just oozes personality.
Uh-huh.
But I figured maybe you bumped into him somewhere in the Indies through Canada, but I guess not.
Yeah, the name really sounds familiar to me, but I couldn't put my hand on it or not.
Yeah.
Someone in the chat room wants to know what your most memorable non-TNA feuds are.
My most memorable non-TNA feuds?
Yeah.
Probably my biggest one in Ontario was Danger Boy Derek Wilde. We feuded on and off for 3 years. We had some pretty crazy matches up here. I was on tour out east in, you know, Prince Edward Island and Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, and I worked a big guy called Kingman. I had a real good run with him.
Okay. Chico says, who would you like to work with who would you like to work a program with in TNA?
I think I really like to get a chance to work with Samoa Joe.
Because
I think our styles are so different, it would be a challenge for me anyways, you know, to work with him, and I think it would be a lot of fun, I think,
mm-hmm.
to work a thing with him. I would like to do something with, you know, any member from Team Canada if they were to, you know, break us apart or whatever. Any of those would be good. So
is it more fun feuding with your friends than somebody you don't know?
Yeah, I think so.
Come up with more things together.
Yeah, that, and you're not so afraid to go a little harder. You know, you don't want to, you know that everything's going to be okay because you're friends no matter what. So it can make for some interesting situations.
Have you ever worked outside of North America, like in the UK or?
I worked in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
I would love to go to the UK. I'd love to go to Japan. I haven't yet, but I hope someday I get an opportunity to do that.
Cody says, ask him the obligatory Ted Hart question. I don't know what he's talking about.
Uh, I don't know Teddy. I've never ever met him. I've never worked on a show with him. I'm sure you guys have heard the legends, but I mean, other than what I've heard, I don't know. I couldn't say.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know what the guy's talking about, but I want to thank you for being on the show. And it's
my pleasure.
It's been an interesting interview, and we look forward to seeing you on TNA some more and see exactly how you find out Sting's coming back.
Yeah, see what happens.
Tune in next week. Eric, best of luck to you. Please give Scotty and Bobby and Petey my best.
I will.
And you take care of yourself. Good luck to you.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Bye, Eric. Eric Young here on Wrestling Weekly, guys. Interesting guy.
Yeah. I was glad to get some background on him. Yeah, Waldo Von Erich was Fritz's little brother. Well, not really, but I worked with him in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I had forgotten it until Eric mentioned it, that he was had trained wrestled a lot of guys up in Canada. So he learned from the basics from somebody that, you know, comes from that that time of discipline, which is important.
Yeah.
So much in the business. It is so important. Yeah. And now when I watch Petey, I've got a bit, as stupid as it may sound, I know more about him, so I'll be more intent in watching him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as we were talking about Bobby Roode. Bobby spent some time down here. Sean Morley broke him in, Val did. And he came down into an invitational camp here. And I really don't know the reason he didn't get offered anything. I think that that particular time, the only thing that might have been a shortcoming was his size. He's put on some size since then, but he's a good hand, very good hand. I'm very impressed with him.
We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, we've got some more news to get to, you know, the week. We haven't covered the whole week yet.
Yeah, and then you got to tell me how you did on your picks for the pay-per-view last.
Absolutely. Also, we're going to find out who won the pay-per-view prediction game, me or Les.
I didn't play.
Didn't do that last week. The power went out before we could do that.
You and Pete didn't do it, or what?
But we played it 2 weeks ago. You and I did.
Yes.
And we never did get to go on the air and talk about the results of that one.
Okay.
So we will talk about the Against All Odds results.
All right, cool.
And we didn't get to do the pay-per-view. I think we had some discussion. We had about 30 minutes of discussion. We discussed the news. And,
well, that's right. You had the big power outage.
And then we got Eric on, and then boom, and the rest, and the power didn't come back on until we were supposed to be off the air. So,
well, GW is showing you how to conserve energy.
Yeah, it was pretty much a bust last week, but those kind of things happen. But this week, it's clear skies and clear sailing for Bill Watts, who's coming up later on in the program. Stick around, guys. More Wrestling Weekly when we come back.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, then an obsession. Check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
News and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total nonstop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Brothers and sisters, we're here for one reason and one reason alone.
What's up, gang? The Trey Dog here with my tag team partner,
JFK.
Are you looking for the latest and greatest in wrestling media?
Check out our brand new site, www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com.
The new home of some of your favorite wrestling radio shows, such as
Wrestling News Live,
WTR Sunday Nights,
Monday Night Mayhem,
Wrestling Weekly,
and Trash Talking Radio.
Also, a brand new show that will cover the latest from the world of PS2, PS3, Xbox, and Xbox 360 video games. Not to mention video interviews and other special wrestling video features. For your one-stop shop in the world of wrestling and video game media,
visit our new home at www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com.
Country boys don't rock and roll. Yeah, the record man's home is so you'll never get it on the radio. Well, I'm a crazy son of a
bad word,
but I know I'm gonna make it big and rich. Yeah, I'm gonna let it.
www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com.
And now it's time for the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Hello, this is Adam Martin from WrestleView.com with some breaking news. For all the latest and greatest in wrestling media, check out a brand new website at www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com, the new home of some of your favorite wrestling radio shows such as WTR Sunday Nights, Wrestling News Live, Monday Night Mayhem, Wrestling Weekly, and Trash Talking Radio. Also, a brand new show that will cover all the latest from the world of PS2, PS3, Xbox, and Xbox 360 video games, not to mention video interviews and other special wrestling video features. For your one-stop shop in the world of wrestling and video game media, visit our new home at www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com. This has been a breaking news update from WrestleView.com. I'm Adam Martin.
Back to you!
Hi there, folks. This is Joseph White here, and I'm here to tell you about a brand new show on www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com. The show is called From Pillar to Post Live, and it is taking Wednesday nights by storm, with such guests as AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Don West, indie star Human Tornado, and many, many others. This show is something you do not want to miss out on. That's P2P Live every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right after In Your Head. For more information, such as how to contact the hosts, upcoming guests, and to chat with other P2P fans in our forums, log on to www.p2plive.net. That's www.p2plive.net. We'll see you Wednesday night, folks.
Doc Young, Les Thatcher, back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Oh,
yes.
It's been a week. It's been quite a week.
It's been a week. 7 days, yeah, usually are.
It's been quite a week, I meant. As far as news, WWE put out a release saying that Bite This has not been canceled, that the Bite This show that comes on Wednesdays is now on hiatus, and it's going to be brought back as part of the some new promotion that they're doing as far as new ways to watch videos on WWE.com, things like that. It's going to be brought in this new packaging, basically, that the Heartthrobs were not released because of what happened on Bite This a few weeks back. And so they're clearing the air.
Would it be horrible when you say, I don't listen to Bite This?
No, it wouldn't.
Okay. So... But yeah, I read about what you saw about the thing with the heartthrobs, and I'm sure that it's just like anything else. They're revamping it, trying to upgrade it. I mean, that's the deal too. To talk about, we were talking about earlier about talent getting stale, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same deal.
Yeah, we're going to revamp the show pretty soon.
Yeah, thank God. I can't wait.
It's going to be Les Thatcher and Doc Young.
Hey, all right.
We're going to switch things around a little bit, you know.
Hey.
That's about all the revamping we're going to be doing
for
a while.
We'll paint the walls of different colors.
Yeah.
See them, right?
Something like that. We'll have the website a different color and, you know.
Yeah.
Just cool little things like that, just to keep you interested.
So why certainly? Why certainly?
And one day we'll put up a new poll.
Gotcha.
Austin Aries also clearing the air today, putting out a statement that he pretty much agrees with the TNA suspension, is what he says. And he's just hoping there's no hard feelings. He's going to serve it out and work the indies and get ready to come back for his re-debut on TNA. And said a couple things that we didn't really know, that he was actually late for the pay-per-view because of his decision. And he was fined for being late.
It's a business. And there's rules.
Yeah.
In our business, sometimes those rules aren't. I mean, they're not always comfortable to deal with. But I think it's probably the same in Deep South. But I know it was my place in OVW. Let's say, for example, you're due in the dressing room at 7 p.m., okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have 7:05 is your pad. Now, if you're going to be 1 minute later than that, you have better called. Or if you don't, you come through the door, put $50 in my hand.
Right.
And you can ask Bill Watts when he gets on. Well, I won't say he was infamous for it, but... he wasn't the only promoter that did it, but he leaned on fines.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes, you know, makes good. It's discipline, man. It's your job. You know, and here's the other thing with our job. Like, we had to be in the dressing room 1 hour before the first match went in the ring. Not your match necessarily, unless you were on the first, but the first match, at least 1 hour. And for several reasons. One, you know, but unlike, you know, today, where they, a lot of stuff's laid out, they don't do that. We didn't do that then. But the point was, then they knew you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can go on with with whatever our plans were. If somebody at the hour is not there and they don't know why, then they have to start making changes. And then so it's a business move too. It makes good sense if you run a business. So it's the regiment thing is a good thing.
Was Bill Watts a Marine or something like that? Or
not that I'm aware of.
I'm gonna have to ask him that. Because he's a really big stickler for discipline, you know, as far as his reputation and stuff.
Well,
like that.
I think you'll find. I won't say there's, but most anyone that's been subjected to that type of thing themselves. Now I can tell you where mine started. I started playing organized sports when I was 7 years old,
mm-hmm.
But not the first 2 years. We're in Cub Scout. But here's a trivia question but a little known fact, unless I told you this before. I played against Roger Staubach in a Cub Scout All-Star baseball game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he started in the outfield for the West team, and I started first base for the East team. But anyway... that was the only 2 years that I played under the same. Starting the third year in organized baseball, I played under the same manager until I got out. He had some high-level minor league experience. We would get fined a nickel for not hitting the cutoff man, or for not. I was a catcher for not, doing the right thing. Whatever it happens to be, taking the extra base, blah blah blah. Right now, he threw a party for us at the end of the year, but now. I was 9 years old when that started, that discipline started. And I never looked at it as being, gosh, this guy's rough on us. I looked at it as that's what I did to do what I wanted to do, which was play baseball.
At that young age, you thought that?
Well, I didn't think of any. I thought it was just part of what I did. You know, I mean, what I mean by that is I wasn't anxious to give up my nickel, but it came with the territory, so to speak. No, I didn't have any profound thoughts at age 9. No,
I was going to say.
Yeah, I was not a child prodigy, no.
But that is an excellent idea. I might become like a, you know, do that community managing the baseball team and start finding...
Okay, so now you're going to hit the kids up.
Start finding kids for bad play at the end of the day. I can, if we have a really bad game, I could buy me a six-pack.
I've seen some those little t-ball games where... You know, you could have got rich on the farm.
Exactly, man.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, the point is, I think, you know, that's just something that, now, obviously, there are bad decisions made, but I understand this one. It's, you know, plus, it's a thing that you have to, there has to be somebody running the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's the inmates running the asylum.
Right.
And once that happens, then that's not good. It's not good.
The Rhode Island Red wants to know if you were ever late for a show.
Was I ever late for a show? You know what? Truthfully, I don't recall ever being late for a show.
Wow.
Yeah. I never. Why? I shouldn't say. Maybe like if you, due to a flight or if, you know, a few minutes or whatever. But never to the point to where, you know, I had to run in the dressing room with my bag and out the door into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But. You know, no, never that late. Never no-showed. Never missed a show, you know. I mean, that wasn't canceled or something.
Right. Excellent. You were telling us a couple weeks ago about not being able to say show.
That's right.
On the air, and you had to say program, or you got fined, what, $50, you said?
Yeah.
Have you ever messed up and said show?
Nope. Not for $50, brother. I can do a lot of things right for $50 a pop. And if the only one thing I need to remember is not to say show, believe me, I can remember that.
I don't know, man. I can't remember little details like that. I just have that problem. I've always been like that. If they ever had a series of fines for me like that, I'd end up paying just to work for them.
I think, too, Doc, in that time and place, you know, we were all self-conscious of covering our business, right? Of kayfabing.
Right.
And so you were accustomed to doing that, watching what you said to people to begin with.
So, yeah, I see. I see what you mean. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like if somebody said to you in 1966, well, I heard that you wrestled Herge, if I said the show must go on, then they could take that in the literal sense and they say, he says show. So you didn't want them to have something to misconstrue. So you tried not to say that. You know, even to when you were doing an interview, you tried not to say, you know, anything that might be used against you, I guess. You know?
Yeah. That's why a lot of the old-timers, they talk real slow.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking about what they're going to say.
Well, you have to. You know. But, you know, you come up with some standardized things at that point in time, too, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, well, you know, everything's a show to a certain degree. And it is, you know. Whether it's a basketball player doing a fancy dunk or Pete Rose belly flopping into the base when he could slide the other way just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, they could live without that. Or when Mark Frederick, the bird, he was talking to the baseball on the pitcher's mound. For those of you who are not old enough, this guy was a, they called him the bird, but he talked to the baseball on the mound to psych himself up when he pitched for the Detroit Tigers. So, you know, there's a little bit of show business and everything. And a good salesman is a good showman
to
a certain degree, right? So it's not totally out of context, but it was just something you learned. You didn't talk that way.
When I played softball, I played for the city of Schererville, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And I did a little show thing where I knelt in front of my bat. I kneeled in front of my bat and closed my eyes before I went up to bat. Is that anything like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I had a ritual. I mean, I always used a certain time. I used a Babe Ruth, Louisville Slugger Babe Ruth model 36-inch bat, or 35-inch, I'm sorry, 35-inch bat.
And this was when you were little, of course.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's a little bat.
No, it's not.
It is to me. I'm not that, I don't know.
Anyway, but yeah, I had rituals, and I mean, like, I would pack my bag a certain way, you know, before we go into the matches. I went about doing my things in the locker room in a certain way, you know. So it's
out of ritual or superstition?
Not superstition, but it's like, you know, in a way, it was doing things a certain way, then you knew they were done.
Right.
You know, it was like I never asked my wife to pack my bag, because I had seen guys show up with one boot, right, because their wife was packing their bag or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, since it's, you know, so I always took care of that stuff.
Yeah, I see what you mean about that.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'd be the same way. I wouldn't have somebody pack my bag for me. Just things like that.
Yeah. Well, I, even when I do television, or when I get ready for the show, I have not a ritual necessarily, but like the half hour before before we get on, I'll go through certain little things, right? Wash my face, so I'm pretty on radio.
Yeah.
So, you know, but different things, right? It's just a thing that I guess started with sports with me, and it just, you know, it's just what I do, man.
Yeah. We're going to ask Bill Watts about all that stuff. Guys, we're going to take a quick break, a real quick break this time. People have been complaining the commercial breaks are too long.
Well, Doc's making all this money, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I can say.
Obsessed with Wrestling demands their commercial be played.
Oh, you know,
once every commercial break.
You talk about high spots. You know, our website is a high spots dealer, right?
Yes, we're an official high spots affiliate.
We're an official high spots affiliate. Well, I was at high spots part of the train. Two of the 3 days. Well, actually, I was there three days because I worked with high spots trainees on Thursday night exclusively. Anyway, it's a real nice place. Mike has got there. The gym is nice, two rings, air conditioned and heated, separate restrooms and showers for the men and the women. And then if you're into collectibles or if you're a wrestler, man, it's just you've died and gone to heaven, right?
Yeah. I mean,
it's got all sorts of neat things. You know, the dolls, the DVDs, I mean, you just wouldn't believe. So I got a chance. He showed me around the office. Got this beautiful Alaskan Husky dog, he and his wife. But it's really a nice place.
Sounds excellent. They make enough money. They should be passing us some of it a little bit.
Well, you know what? I would assume they're hustling, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really easy, guys. All you got to do is, if you're going to buy something off High Spots, come to our site, click on a banner ad that says High Spots Affiliate, and order it. It's the same price, and you're helping out Wrestling Weekly.
Don't send Doc Young to Hawaii this year.
Yes. It pays my light bill and buys me beer.
I heard that.
We're going to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, our featured guest, Bill Watts, coming on Wrestling Weekly. Doc Young and Les Thatcher, stick around.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
And now it's time for the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Hello, this is Adam Martin from WrestleView.com with some breaking news. For all the latest and greatest in wrestling media, check out a brand new website at www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com, the new home of some of your favorite wrestling radio shows such as WTR Sunday Nights, Wrestling News Live, Monday Night Mayhem, Wrestling Weekly, and Trash Talking Radio. Also, a brand new show that will cover all the latest from the world of PS2, PS3, Xbox, and Xbox 360 video games, not to mention video interviews and other special wrestling video features. For your one-stop shop in the world of wrestling and video game media, visit our new home at www.wrestlingmedianetwork.com. This has been a breaking news update from WrestleView.com. I'm Adam Martin.
Back to you.
Here's the latest news and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your
your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Hi there, folks. This is Joseph White here, and I'm here to tell you about a brand new show on www.WrestlingMediaNetwork.com. The show is called From Pillar to Post Live, and it is taking Wednesday nights by storm, with such guests as AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Don West, indie star Human Tornado, and many, many others. This show is something you do not want to miss out on. That's P2P Live every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right after In Your Head. For more information, such as how to contact the hosts, upcoming guests, and to chat with other P2P fans in our forums, log on to www.p2plive.net. That's www.p2plive.net. We'll see you Wednesday night, folks.
Brothers and sisters, we're here for one reason, and one reason alone.
What's up, gang? The Trey Dog here with my tag team partner,
JFK.
Are you looking for the latest and greatest in wrestling media?
Check out a brand new site, www.WrestlingMediaNetwork.com.
The new home of some of your favorite wrestling radio shows, such as
Wrestling News Live,
WTR Sunday Nights,
Monday Night Mayhem,
Wrestling Weekly,
and Trash Talking Radio.
Also, a brand new show that will cover the latest from the world of PS2, PS3, Xbox, and Xbox 360 video games. Not to mention video interviews and other special wrestling video features. For your one-stop shop in the world of wrestling and video game media,
visit our new home at www.WrestlingMediaNetwork.com.
Country boys don't rock and roll. Yeah, the record band's home, so you'll never get it on the radio. Well, I'm a crazy son of a
bad word,
but I know I'm gonna make it big and rich. Yeah, I'm gonna let it.
www.WrestlingMediaNetwork.com.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. On the line right now, our featured guest, another legend on the show, Bill Watts, is on the show. Bill, I want to thank you for being on Wrestling Weekly this week.
My pleasure.
You know what, Doc, we were talking, those listening, we were just talking before we came on. Bill and I first met in 1962 in Louisville, Kentucky. We were both working for the Jim Barnett office out of Indianapolis, and he was just getting his start in the business. And one of the craziest human beings I've ever met in my life is the one that got you in, Wahoo McDaniel.
Yeah, Wahoo. Well, see, Wahoo and I played football together at OU.
Right.
And so Wahoo was home one Christmas holiday, and I'll never forget, and we were all out doing that favorite pastime, drinking Colorado Kool-Aid, which we call Coors Beer. And Wahoo had to cash a check, and he pulled out this check, and, you know, we're talking back in the early 60s, and the check was a big amount of money, and I said, where'd you get that for? He said, for wrestling. I said, what, for a month? He said, no. I said, for a week? He said, no. I said, what? He said, no, for one match. I said, my gosh, who do I have to kill to get that? I can beat you in about 90 seconds. And he said, man, watch, you've got to get in wrestling. He said, you'd be great at it. And so that was the thing. And then he said, I'll get you booked. And so that's how it started. And he recommended me come up there, and I came up there, and Bach Estes was running that office for Jim. Actually, Jim Barnett owned it. And then Wahoo, about that time, left to go back to play pro ball, or had already left to go play pro ball. So then I got up there and got lost in all that, because Bach Estes, by the time I got there, I think he probably slept one day, so he forgot why I was even coming. And, you know, you got kind of hand around. But they also had a football team that's about like the World Football League or about the European League was a league for the NFL and the AFL at that time. And they had the Indianapolis Warriors, which was a phenomenal team, by the way. And one of my good friends, Bob Griffin, who was a two-time All-American out of Arkansas and also All-Pro and on the championship World Championship team with the Los Angeles Rams, was the defensive coach. And so I played nose guard for the Indianapolis Warriors while I was breaking into pro wrestling. So everything just fell into place, even though at that time, after I got all the way up there, I thought, oh, my golly, nothing's working out. It's amazing how things sometimes come through when you least expect it.
It is. Although you had a college education, this business is an education within itself, is it not?
Well, yeah. You got to realize back when I was going to school, I hadn't even considered how I was going to make a living. I just assumed you went to school and got your degree, and it took care of itself. And I'll never forget, I was going through at the student union, and a guy was making a speech, and I just listened to his speech. And you're talking about in the late 50s and early 60s, he was saying, if you get to where you're making $25,000 a year, you're super wealthy. And so when I got into pro wrestling and was breaking in, Art Nelson, I'll never forget, came up to me and said, what are you doing in wrestling? He said, it's really bad. It's so bad you can hardly make $25,000 a year. And I thought, my gosh, that's what that guy said you could be super wealthy doing. And you got to realize back then, I think I signed a football contract with the Houston Oilers. I think I had a $700 or $800 signing bonus, and my contract was $8,000.
Wow.
And, that's the kind of money that was being paid. The highest contract on the Houston Oilers team back then was Billy Cannon, who was the Heisman Trophy winner out of LSU, and his contract was $120,000, and everybody was calling him millionaire. And then the next biggest contract came along in about, right around 64, 65, when Joe Namath was drafted by the Jets, and he was, it came out in the paper, $420,000, and Wahoo was playing for the Jets. He said, that's crazy. Nobody's making that much money. $420,000.
I remember reading in Zonka and Kick's book, they titled one of the chapters and included Wahoo's name, that they were talking about the two-a-days in practice, that the Indian had finished the morning practice, go play 18 holes and come back and do the afternoon practice where everybody else was laying in bed.
Yeah, but they didn't realize the one thing that I realized later, that he was taking speed back then all the time. He actually got drafted originally by the other Dallas team. They had the Dallas Cowboys and the Dallas Texans. He got drafted by the Dallas Texans, and he passed out at practice from overdosing on speed.
Whoa.
And so I used to tease Wallace and said, my gosh, Indian, you haven't been asleep since 1957. And I don't say Indian derogatorily because I'm part Chickasaw. That's just how that's how we used to talk, and of course we called him Chief and everything else. But Wahoo was a free spirit. He was a great guy,
yeah,
a great friend, and he was an explosive. I was just looking the other day for something I had to do, and he's in the AFL Hall of Fame, and he's in the New York Jets Hall of Fame. But he played for the Texans. He played for the Houston Oilers, the San Diego Chargers. I think he was even Denver and Miami.
Miami.
This guy, he was one tough middle linebacker.
Yeah, I remember the story of him and who was it, the coach at Miami before Shula? George Wilson, I think.
Mm.
But I think they were in Denver, and they were out after hours because Wahoo was famous for that, too.
Yep.
For skipping curfew. But him and Bobby Bruggers were out, and Bruggers was a rookie. And Wahoo, they were at a strip club, and the car got blocked in. He couldn't find out how to move them. So he got back, and he got mad and started banging the cars in front and back. And they got locked up, long story short. So Bruggers had to get him out, and Bruggers, being a rookie, the first thing he does is call George Wilson and wakes him up in the middle of the night to get Wahoo out of jail, the head coach.
Yeah, well, it was a different era. Somebody was talking the other day about it was just a totally different era. There wasn't as much emphasis. I mean, the athletes kind of flew under the radar, and so you really got away with an awful lot of stuff that you shouldn't have got away with, and that kind of fed that fuel to the fact that we were above the law. It's kind of that privileged status, so to speak, that now is reserved more for politicians and multimillionaires and movie stars.
Yeah.
But yeah, but, you know,
the press really didn't used to come after you all the time like they do now. Now the press comes after everybody.
Yeah. But you know, Doc, you hear us talking about somebody like Wahoo. But then on the other hand, these same people were structured when they needed to be structured, were they not, Bill?
Well, you know, you couldn't. Yeah, you had to pay the price when you were competing.
Sure.
You know, let's face it, different guys could do different things, and everybody approached it differently. But yeah, Wahoo could get in shape, and he could push himself, and he could go. You wouldn't play it as long as he played without being able to go. I mean, you know, you might say somebody might look at somebody and say, "Oh, he's just lucky." You didn't last up there just being lucky. You had to have something and bring to the. You know, the difference is each level you go up is your consistency.
Sure.
I mean, at high school you might rise up and have a super game, or in college, but each level you go up, the biggest thing in the pro is that you're consistent.
You know, fast forward to the Atlanta 73-74. When I do my camps around the country, sometimes we start talking about chemistry and stuff. And one of the things, and I'm sure you remember once I mentioned it, but when you and Shane were tag teaming there some, and Doc, when I tell you this, now this was never set up, and they never were going to turn on one another. But the deal was, Bill was a straight laced, you know, athlete from Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and Bobby was a cigar smoking, you know, hustler. And Bill would sit behind the desk with Gordon and I for the promo, and Shane would slop his butt on the front of that desk, and he's smoking his cigar, and he'd blow the smoke at Bill's face, and Bill would say, "Shane, don't blow that smoke," you know. And Bobby would say, "That's what I love about William. He's all heart." But the point I'm getting at is they played off of that, and everyone's expecting them to turn on one another, but the thing was they never did. But that was the edginess of the whole thing. I thought that made it so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bobby was a phenomenal talent.
Yeah.
And, I didn't like him when I first met him because Sam Muchnick kind of protected him as he was a babyface in St. Louis, and I wanted him to be fed to me when I was in there as a heel so I could crush him, and Sam wouldn't do it, and he just kept took care of Bobby. So then Bobby came in, like you said, in Georgia, he was a heel, and I was too at the time, but that natural thing started coming out and flowing, and he and I really got a kick out of it. And, you know, like you said, I'd finally say, "Bobby, you do that one time, I'm going to slap you right out of here." And, boy, he'd quit. And then when I'd finish my interview and go off, and he'd turn to you or Gordon and say, "Man, that's what I like about him. He's got a lot of spirit."
Yeah.
You know, or something just like you said. And if you recall in one match where I had the match with Tim Woods, where we had an amateur wrestling match that went three periods, and I think we had Lou Fayette refereeing, and we had three judges.
Right.
And one judge was my roommate. And then we had a judge that was a baby face, and the other judge was Shane. And, of course, when it got down to it, Shane was like, he was supposed to certainly, no matter what, vote for me. And he started playing that same game like he didn't know if he could really vote for me or not. And, I mean, yeah, the crowd loved it. And it was a neat thing. And again, it was one of those things that just, you know, we reacted to a lot of things that happened instead of having them all choreographed.
Yeah, and that's – I know this has been rehashed over, but that's still what these kids are missing. I said the excitement to me wasn't getting my stuff in or my quadruple somersault. The excitement to me was playing the people.
Well, yeah, it's an era. You know, I'll never forget when I went back to WCW for that run there. That Sting told me, he said, "Bill, the business has changed." I said, "You're right, Sting. We used to get paid what we were worth based on what we drew. You guys get paid no matter what, and way more than what you're worth." And the key is, I was talking to a guy the other day, and I said, "When's the last time you've ever seen a match where the fans were really mad, where there was a riot, where you had to fight your way to the ring and fight your way from the ring, get a police escort to get out of town?"
Yes.
I said, "That doesn't happen anymore because, first of all, the fans know it's all and that you know, it's all choreographed, and they generally already know who's going to win or lose before they get there."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, back in the era that we came up in, the or even when I created Ron Simmons to be the world's champion, the first black world's champion of a major promotion, and that happened in Baltimore when I went over to try to straighten out WCW, the people in the crowd were crying. They were crying because what we did, they had not anticipated, and we pulled it off so well. And it was so awesome that they started, their people were in the crowd crying. And Baltimore, as you remember, was a tough town to people. That was a pretty cynical town. So
right.
The proof of the pudding is that if it's done well with great technicians doing it, you can fool anybody. I remember Kowalski and I got into one in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and Jim Dillon was the commission referee. This is before he was in wrestling. And we got into a deal and carried it on down the dressing room where all the boys were pulling us apart. And the boys thought we were going to kill each other, and five of them called the office to snitch off on us. And Wally and I had ridden together, and we're laughing all the way home. So what I'm saying is, great workers can get in situations. If you can fool the wrestlers, then it's that good, and it can be. And so somebody said to me the other day, said, "Well, what do you think about the kayfabe being gone?" And I said, "Well, you know, my wife wanted me to go see Titanic."
Right.
I said I didn't go because I knew the ending. I knew the boat sank.
Right.
You know, when you take the mystery out of it, to me, you've lost something.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, but that's the other thing, too, though, that I try to tell these kids, and you just said it as well. It's still today, I don't care how many people are smart, it's your job is to suspend their disbelief just like it would be an Academy Award-winning actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I—that's the part that—and it was a little easier for us because a bigger portion of people believed.
Well, but you know, and you also had guys, even though each generation that came down worked at a different pace, where we, as you just said, we controlled the emotion of the audience, and today the audience controls the emotion of the match.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's a different thing, and again, it's all choreographed. I couldn't get over. When I was with Vince at WWE, and I hear guys came in late, and they had a 10-minute match to put together, and they had an hour before match time, and they couldn't get a 10-minute match worked out. I thought, good golly, what's going on? I mean, you know, I can remember flying in a bad storm situation where I had to charter an airplane out of Memphis to make Jackson, Mississippi, and by the time I got there, it was 11 o'clock at night, police escort there, change gear, go right into the ring, and I think Spoiler and I went like 30, 40 minutes and had a knockdown, drag-out match and never got to talk one single thing. It just went in the match and in the ring and had your match.
Sure.
And that happened all the time. Sure. And I'm not putting down the guys today. I think the kids today are bigger, stronger, faster, and there's so many things that they do so much better. It's just a difference, and it'll never go back to the way it was. So it's not sour grapes. It's just a difference in how the people are educated.
Yeah, you're right, you're right.
Well, I had some questions, but he keeps answering them.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But, you know, Bill, Doc had asked me, too, about, you know, because everyone talks about Bill Watts' fines, and I brought it up down in Tampa last year that we couldn't say show on the program. We used the word program. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, was that hard? I said, not 50 bucks pop, it wasn't.
Well, you know, Les, I tell you, the fines, the difference was I believed in running it like a business.
Right.
I believed that an athlete had to be responsible. See, I still believe in personal responsibility, which culturally and from our society, we've tried to replace that. We always want to have something we can blame it on except the person.
Exactly.
So the fines really got people's attention. I remember when I went up to see Vince. For that 3 months I worked for him, I walked in and Shawn Michaels was sitting there, his top guy. He said, gosh almighty, Vince, he fined me the first week I was in the wrestling business. And I just looked at him and I said, did I fine you again? He said, no. I said, it must have worked. And
yeah.
So, you know, a lot of that's been overplayed because it wasn't understood.
Sure.
But I can't tell you how many guys worked for me and then left, and sometimes left angry or left where we weren't seeing eye to eye, that called me back later and said, man, I didn't realize how much you were teaching me. And it was all about being personally responsible and that you earned what you had and you earned your earned respect and you treated the business with respect. The fines were just a way of getting your attention because, you know, it's like a guy says, well, the motel didn't wake me up. Well, yeah. Guess what? I'm not booking the motel. Or the guy said the plane was late. Well, you should have taken an earlier flight. Or my car broke down. I mean, I used to think, my gosh, guys, do you think I was born at night? It just wasn't last night.
Yeah.
So all these excuses you're running by me, I've already, you know, I pioneered them. So, you know, again, it was just a method of running your business like a business. I mean, the National Football League had fines.
Sure.
You know, any other place has fines. It wasn't, my fines weren't punitive. They weren't, they weren't something that you couldn't afford, but it got your attention. And then once you understood our system, you knew what was expected. And so I didn't have very many, except maybe like Buddy Landell, who was just like Buddy Landell. You know, I love that kid. He used to take great pride in how many. And you know what people didn't know? A lot of times I was bonusing him back later for busting his can and something else. I'd bonus him back. He's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so again, I think a lot of people take a lot of things that I did out of context because they didn't understand why I did it or when I did it, or they weren't a part of it, or they were on the outside looking in and they just didn't understand it. So naturally, it's a lot easier to be a critic.
Well, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with discipline. Our business is a lot of discipline, and you might as well start at an early age. I know when I had a developmental territory for WWE, we had, you had a five-minute pad. If you had to be there at 7, you had a five-minute pad. If you called and I'm in traffic, I've got a flat tire, whatever, then you had passed that. But at 7:06, you better come through the door with $50 in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because you can't be setting up a huge show and not know who's going to be there to be on it.
Exactly.
You know, and if you've got a main eventer that's something's happened to him, you certainly need to know so you can know how to adjust your card. So again, it has to have a balance on all sides. And I don't ever apologize for how I ran my offices anyway. And to me, back then they had 25, 26 places you could work just in North America. So if you didn't get along with me, you had a lot of places you could go.
Yeah. I want to take some questions from the chat room. Raven wants to know, what did you enjoy better, being in the ring or running WCW?
Is that the Raven, the kid that used to work?
No.
Okay. I think, everything happened in its time. I loved being in the ring at first, but then as I got into the promotion, that it's so draining to be in the promotion, to do all the work, the booking, the TVs, and everything that went on with it, and then wrestle too. So at some point you're starting to lose your edge, and you're certainly not being able to maintain your conditioning. And age is catching in, and I don't care what. I was one of the few guys that knew I was getting older, and I didn't. My ego was geared in a different direction by then, and so it wasn't killing me to not be in the ring. And I realized that if I didn't build other stars, I was trapped in the ring forever. So I think I loved all aspects of it. I think I embraced the aspects as they came along. I really liked the times I was working. I never thought I was a great worker. I knew how to get over, but I also love the challenge of booking and seeing and developing talent and developing angles and watching them have success. I was always motivated pretty much by the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Russell Finn is telling me the story about you ribbing wrestlers by telling them to get on the floor so you could show them a move, and then you kick them in the ribs. He wants to know if any of it's true.
No.
Okay.
No, that sounds, no, good gosh, no. No, we had a lot of ribs. I had a rib one time with Salendo Rodriguez, who I loved. He was a mute that was in our business. Great worker. He could read your lips and everything else. I mean, this kid was a great worker and in great condition. And we got he got to come and give me a fit one time down in New Orleans, and he bet me $200 that he could do 10 push-ups with me on his back.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "There's no way you can." And he always used Grizzly as his translator for me. And so we got all set up, and then as he got down the push-up position, I got on his back, he started doing the push-ups. I just reached down, between his leg, and grabbed him by the testicles and yanked, and he fell flat on his face, and I told him he lost the $200. And he was just, I mean, I thought he was going to start talking. And it was really, everybody was dying laughing. But I never took the money. I loved that kid. He was just a super kid. But no, I'd never kick somebody in the ribs that I can remember. We did some tough things, and some tough ribs. But no, I wasn't kicking in the ribs. That's something that's pretty darn dangerous.
Yeah.
And I don't think you kick somebody in the ribs unless you were seriously trying to put them away.
Yeah, he says the Ultimate Warrior had said that.
No, the Ultimate Warrior was such a. I mean, that guy. He was the biggest, one of the biggest I ever saw. Anyway, he was such a sissy. I've never seen a guy with that much of a body that was such a sissy, but he was. I had no respect for him. He ran out of the ring when we had a lumberjack match with belts in Shreveport, and he wouldn't even take his belting there, but Sting did. Sting took his belting, and we went, drug him back out of the dressed him and belted him again. Then they both left, and I only sent Grizzly to go get Sting. I didn't want the Ultimate Warrior back.
Mm-hmm.
And Sting came back, and Sting was scared to death. He thought I was going to get him in the ring. As a matter of fact, I booked him against myself in Tulsa, and I didn't realize how scared he was, but he came up to me and asked if there were some high spots he could call, and I said, sure, I want to see what you can do. And he kept thinking I was going to, and we had a good match, and I had a great deal of respect for that kid. I saw the talent in him then, and certainly it proved out to be the case. Sting was an exceptional guy, and he was a guy that had value, and he had integrity.
You ran a lot of good talent through that territory over a period
of
time.
We sure did. By the way, I do want to plug my website, cowboybillwatts.com. We just got that up and going, I guess because the book's coming out, and this had a huge newspaper story in the Tulsa World that I think the Associated Press is even picking up. The guy that wrote it, the sports writer that wrote it, just did a bang-up job as a feature-length story. I'm sure they'll cut it down for the AP, but anyway, my book, the Cowboy and the Cross, the Bill Watts story, and then my website, www.cowboybillwatts.com.
Cool, excellent. Wait, has the book come out yet?
Yeah, it's supposed to be. You know, everybody's calling the major bookstores, and like Barnes & Noble says, well, it's been out of stock since October. Well, that's when they thought it was being released. It was just shipped last week, and so they don't know, and it's not on the shelves yet. And Borders said, well, we've got it back ordered. You know, so I don't know how this happens. The vice president of ECW said that's just the way it goes in the book business. It'll be a while before they find what they've got shipped in and get it on the shelves, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now that Amazon.com, that it's available, and I know Barnes & Noble said they'd order me one. Of course, I was just calling to see if they had it. I haven't got my own copy yet.
Wow.
What possessed you to write the book, Bill?
Huh?
What possessed you to write the book? What made you?
I wasn't going to, Les. I didn't have any desire to write a book on wrestling. I've always figured that to write a wrestling book, that to tell our story the way we lived it would hurt too many people because, you know, I mean,
yes.
I mean, basically it was, you know, we were in a very hedonistic, immoral, amoral, unethical business. And then the only other thing would be, since you write the book, all you're going to do is self-grandize yourself even more, you know, as we all become bigger legends in our own minds. So I had no desire to do it. And a kid named Scott Williams, who is a reporter on a Galveston newspaper and a wrestling aficionado, writes a wrestling column, and is also a Christian. And he came to me, and I said, well, unless I could, I'm at a point in my life where my life has changed a lot. And if I've always been able to talk, but I think I might have something of value. And if there's not something that's bigger than me, there's something I can leave behind, whereas if somebody reads my book, if just one person reads it and they stop and think about life and think that there's more to life than the physical and the material, there's a spiritual side of life, and where are you going to spend eternity? And it just gets them curious enough that they'll seek it, and hopefully they'll have an experience with Jesus Christ, and see that even in the darkest sin and the toughest circumstances, that the love of Christ, not religion, I'm not talking about religion, I'm talking about a personal relationship with Christ, mm-hmm. can penetrate the hardest heart. And so now, looking back at my life, I realize that the only reason I'm still alive is because God wasn't through with me. And I can look back at times I should have been dead, and all the things we went through, all of us went through. But, I mean, some of the things I went through was even more extreme maybe than others, and that all those had a purpose and a reason to prepare me for where I am now, and maybe, like I say, to get to change one life. So that's the whole motivation. And and I didn't come up with the name of it either. Scott Williams came up with the name of it, and the cover, didn't even want that deal that's on the cover, but the publisher insisted, and so I think they're pretty excited about it, and so it's the Cowboy and the Cross, because, you know, they feel that with my rebellion, wrestling, and redemption, you know, my life is
right.
My life is a snapshot of rebellion, and I think I've gotten to the point where I can look into me and understand why I became so rebellious to all authority. And I think that I want people to be able to look, I want kids to look inside themselves and say, why do I act the way I do? Because Bill Watts understands that my mother was bipolar, so I didn't know what her expectations were for me daily as to whether I was going to be the one she loved the most or the one she punished the most. Well, you can't be on that yo-yo, or you can't be a kid in a family that your parents are always comparing you to the other kids. which has been typical for so long. Each kid, each child is unique, and God doesn't make any mistakes. I don't care if the kid's crippled or has a mental disorder or whatever. That's not a mistake by God. He's put there for a purpose and should be loved individually for what he is. So I want parents to think that if they think, well, there's something wrong with my kid, they need to go figure out why the kid's like that, because probably some of those behavioral mechanisms that we install in ourselves is a protection. Mine was protect me from the pain of not measuring up or failing my mother or the pain of being hurt by a bully or being afraid of this, and that's where I developed anger and a temper, and then that became my anesthetic, and then pretty soon it had a hold of me and a control of me. It's kind of like that old Indian proverb, if you have two dogs in you and one's mean and vicious and the other's calm and nice, which one's going to be the stronger? And the old chief said, well, whichever one you feed. And for a long time, I fed the wrong dog, and so I ran on temper and energy and everything else. And I still have a lot of that in me. I'm not telling you all of a sudden that I've been transformed magically to where I'm holier than thou or not. I'm not. But I understand my relationship with Christ, in that it's by his grace and his mercy and not by my performance. It's by his performance, not mine. So if I can help somebody understand that, then to me, it's all worth it. Other than that, it wasn't worth me getting back in the mud, the blood, and the beer and reliving it, because, Les, as you know, you got to relive it.
Yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a life that even if you read about it, if you haven't lived it, it was, it's just a whole different world, and people can't possibly understand. Hank Williams Jr. said one time, there's a set of rules for the road and a set of rules for home.
Yeah, isn't that, well, you know, I started out my book that I've never seen a family in wrestling that wasn't dysfunctional.
Right.
And what horrible fathers and parents we were. Because, you see, children learn what they see and what's lived around their home, not what's said. And it's like, well, I'm saying to my son, I don't want you to drink. He said, but, Dad, you got a beer in your hand, we're doing 100 miles an hour. Well, by God's son, I can handle it.
Right.
And all the cops know me anyway.
Yeah.
So what's your kid going to think?
Right.
And so what happens is your kids are telling you one thing, but as soon as they're out of your sight, and as soon as your kids are around the business, they know that you're a whore, an adulterer. You know, I mean, your kids pick up on all of it. So all of a sudden they see there's a double standard. There's a standard, like you just said, a standard for the road and a standard for home. Well, that's, hey, what a moral and ethical and lesson and principle that is.
Right.
It's like, well, let's just listen to our culture. And let's base our self-esteem on our culture. And that's the most fickle self-esteem you'll ever have. If you don't get into a relationship with God, who's your creator, and understand how much you love. See, you can't manipulate God. You can't manipulate God and make him love you anymore. He's already demonstrated the highest act of love the world has ever seen, that he sent his son to die for you. So if you can't get in a relationship with God and get your self-esteem from God, you're never going to have any peace or true self-esteem, because it's going to be based on some definition of the world, and that changes all the time.
Mm-hmm. WrestleFan wants to know, what are your thoughts on Jim Ross and your memories of doing commentary with him at UWF?
Jim Ross is a talented, talented kid, a great kid, one of the blessings of my life. I hired him right out of college, smart aleck young punk that was straight-A student. And we started him as a referee. He went through all the business from the ground up. And I'm telling you, he was a student. And he earned his respect in his position with me and with my company. He became part of our booking team. He became our syndication team. He had a lot of input there. He was tremendously successful. It's cost Jim Ross more to be my friend than anything, because when I was still messing with the business, every place he'd go, he'd try to get me in after I'd already retired. And every time I'd go there, when I'd blow up at him and leave or do something, he'd end up getting fired. So poor Jim. Jim's paid a high price for my friendship, but I have nothing but respect for Jim Ross. And I think he's one of the best commentators out there. I think at one time, I think Vince is not going to let anybody commentate the way that we would see it, because Vince wants to keep his... I think Vince has created a situation where he's created a cartoon world that came to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they're sitting there talking. They're more entertaining themselves, and they're detracting from what's in the ring, as far as I'm concerned, where I believe the commentator had to focus everything on the people in the ring, because the commentator doesn't put a fanny every 17 inches. It's the wrestlers.
Right.
And so Gordon Solie was a master.
Yes.
And Jim Ross became a master of commentating. And I'll tell you a lesson. I thought the greatest guy, the guy that finished me as far as my, what I call my PhD in wrestling, was Eddie Graham. When I met Eddie Graham, he gave more to me than all of them. And I learned something from all of them. So I had a great respect for all the people I worked for, and I learned things from, even from the ones I didn't like. But Eddie Graham had a something in him, and I'll never forget one of the times he corrected me when I was running the Florida office, and I was getting over, and I already knew by then that I'd picked up on this in Hawaii with Ed Francis and Lord Blears when they had an hour and a half show and only put two matches on. And so they had an hour of talking and 30 minutes of wrestling, and it just blew me away because what it showed with their ratings was people cared more about the character of the wrestler, because how many drop kicks can you do and all the other stuff. But they wanted to get to know the wrestler because that's what they were relating to. They were relating to the person and the character. So I knew that I could get over better talking, and it didn't take near as much energy. So I'd go interrupt Soli all the time, who was the host of Florida Championship Wrestling. And I got to where I was really kind of dinging him and riding him and being cutting him off and all that. And Eddie called me, and Eddie was so smooth, and he'd always start talking to you about something. And he'd slowly come around to why that he'd call you. And he finally got around. And he said, you know, Bill, I was just thinking. He said, you know, you're doing a great job, because he made me a partner when I went down there. I was not only the booker, I was a partner in the company. And so he said, but let me ask you. And Johnny Carson was the biggest name in show business at that time, The Tonight Show. He said, what if Johnny Carson had you come on The Tonight Show? And you decided to insult him, to cut him off, to run over him, and degrade him. How long do you think you'd be on that show, and do you think you'd ever be back? I said, oh, no, he probably just stopped the show and had me removed, and I'd never get to come back. He said, well, Gordon works for us, and we own the office, and in a way, you're one of Gordon's bosses. He said, but to the people, Gordon is the host of our show. And he said, if we as a promotion don't have any credibility, if Gordon doesn't have any credibility as our host, then all of it means nothing. All of it is then a complete setup and has no credibility and no integrity. So for you to go out there on that show and intimidate and take over and put Gordon down, he said, you're destroying Gordon, and at the time you're destroying Gordon, you're destroying our company, and you're destroying yourself. And I thought about it, and I said, my gosh, you're right. And you never, ever heard of me put another commentator ever down, and nobody ever worked for me could put the commentator down. At the same time, the commentator had to direct all his commentary off of himself onto the people and the action in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my theory.
Wow.
And I think it still holds true.
Yeah.
It should.
Yeah. Well,
it should, yeah. It should. But
if utilized properly. But, you know, Bill, that's the thing that I, you know, going around and working with the independents and stuff, and you hear somebody, you don't know what. Well, that stuff don't work anymore. Well, yeah, it does if you know how what you're doing. It sure does work.
Sure it does. It doesn't change.
Yeah. I got one last question for you before we get out of here. We're running out of time, but Professor VNS wants to know, what was your experience like when you appeared on Ring of Honor show in November, and what do you think of the Ring of Honor product?
Well, you know, I was only there the one night, and Jimmy Cornette brought me up there, who's another one of my proteges that I love. And I had a wonderful time. They treated me like $1 million. I enjoyed their show. I don't watch wrestling anymore. I haven't watched wrestling in a long, long time. Why would I want to frustrate myself? Plus, I think wrestling has gone beyond the pale. I think it's lost all function in promoting any responsibility for our children, for respect for authority, respect for gender, and also promotes drugs. So I think wrestling is really a bad thing in how it's evolved. But I really enjoyed the show that night, and I watched one or two matches. And one of the matches, there was one match that was really good. These guys wrestled, worked just like we used to. They took their time and built their whole match, and I enjoyed watching. And I enjoyed the tremendous respect that everybody in the dressing room came up and were very kind and very nice, and the guys. I can't say anything but the highest for how I was treated on that, and I enjoyed it, and I so much, and it was just great to be around Jimmy Cornette, because he's a blast anyway.
Yeah, Jimmy's great. Ring of Honor comes around around my way about four, maybe five times a year, and I go all the time. I'm like you. It's some of the best work rate and some of the best psychology is done there with those kids.
Well, I was impressed. I told the two guys that I watched the match before Jimmy and I left, because he'd already done his shtick, and I told them, I said, boy, I really appreciated how you guys did your match, and I enjoyed it 100%. I said, you guys took your time, and I said, so you had the people in your hand from the start to the end. And, of course, those are great fans.
Yeah.
I mean, fans that come to these events, they love the business. It's like the deal at Tampa that we were at, that I was so impressed in the question-and-answer period. I haven't had a fan ask a stupid question. I haven't had a fan that hasn't shown their tremendous love and respect for the business. It's been an enjoyable time. The few times I've gone to one of these things, I have really enjoyed it. I've received so much more than I've given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was amazed. I had a kid come through a line in Charlotte, it's almost 2 years ago now. He said, you signed my baby shoe. My mother was carrying me.
Oh, my golly.
And, you don't think about it at the time that somebody would, and this kid was like 30 years old, right? I'm thinking, wow. You don't think what you're doing is that sustaining. And then now when people remember things that you don't remember yourself, you're like, damn, maybe I did do something that was worth paying attention to, you know.
You know, another thing that humbled me is when I started having my experiences with God, which has not been an easy journey for me. It's been a very mercurial roller coaster at times for me. But I found out so many people that were wrestling fans that also loved God had been praying for me. And it's pretty humbling when people take their time to actually, and they were not that they were praying for me to win a match or something, they were praying for my soul and praying for me in the Lord. And that's very humbling that people care enough. And one other thing, you remember how much I loved Hiro Matsuda, and you did too, Les.
Sure.
He was one of the guys that was so highly respected. And when Hiro died, I didn't even know he was sick, because he with that liver cancer, he didn't want anybody to know because it destroyed him physically.
Right.
And the greatest thing, one of the greatest things I ever heard was when Brian Blair shared with me that right before Hiro died, he spoke to him about Christ and that Hiro accepted the Lord. And I just rejoiced, because now then when I'm in heaven, Hiro is already there. And what a wonderful thing, because when I see one of our peers die that I don't know where they are in the Lord, the first thing that hits me is I hope that somebody had talked to them, that they've accepted Jesus Christ. Like when Hawk, of the Road Warriors, somebody,
right.
one of the boys that's accepted the Lord said, well, why did the Lord take him now? I said, praise the Lord, his patience, that he waited till Hawk came to the Lord before he took him.
Yeah.
Which way do you look at it, because it's kind of like Pascal said, I'd rather live my life like there is a God and find out there isn't, than to live my life like there's not a God and find out there is.
Yes.
Because eternity, where are you going to spend eternity? That's the message we need to get on with everybody. They need to start thinking about what is there after this life. Where eternity is a long time.
Sure is. It sure is. Doc, we're running over, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
We're going to have to let you go, Bill. We could go on and on, but it's been a great interview.
I was running out of stuff to say.
No, you weren't. Listen, we'll have to do this again sometime.
All right.
It's been such a pleasure. God bless you. Take care of yourself.
All right, guys.
All right, bye, Bill.
Bye.
Bill Watts here on Wrestling Weekly. Les, I want to quickly go over the results of the pay-per-view.
Okay.
Against all odds. It was the James Gang over LAX. You and I went with LAX. Team 3D beat Team Canada. You and I both picked Team 3D, so that's a point apiece. Rhino beat Abyss. You went with Abyss. I went with Rhino. That's 2-1. AMW beat Sabin and Dutt. You and I went with AMW. We also went with Samoa Joe in that three-way with Styles and Daniels. We got a point for that each. And Jarrett versus Cage, which was weird, we both said that Jarrett would retain, but you had said that Jarrett would win. I had said that Cage would win. Jarrett obviously didn't retain, so I'm not giving a point for that each.
Okay. That's cool, man.
So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4-3.
Okay.
Once again,
well,
I win.
If I ever start another company, I'm going to bring you into book.
Exactly, see?
All right. Listen, I will not be on next week. I want to let everybody know I'm doing a Q&A at the Gulf South Wrestling Gym. That's Paul Bearer's independent company down the Gulf Coast. So on
Thursday evening next week.
Yep.
But I'll be back the following week. And, Doctor, you're in charge.
Yes. We're going to have to get a guest co-host. And I don't know. Maybe we'll get a wrestler. We'll see.
Hey, whatever works for you, boss.
So we'll see you guys next week once again on Wrestling Weekly. Let's see. Starting from 8 to 10 Eastern. Every Thursday we do it, guys, so stick around and keep checking up what Les is up to every week at lesthatcher.com and epwt.com. Thanks to WrestleTalk Radio for their help tonight. Don't forget to check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. It's a great site. It's got all the research that you need over at obsessedwithwrestling.com. Wrestling Weekly is a part of the Wrestling Media Network at wrestlingmedianetwork.com and radiowrestling.net. We'll see you guys next week, guys.
You've been listening to Wrestling Weekly. Please join us next Thursday from 8 to 10 Eastern here on www.wrestlingweekly.com.